Hi, this is Dr. John Schinnerer, and this is The Power of Mindset. My name is Dr. John Schinnerer. We were kicking ideas around for this talk, and we were trying to come up with something that you all would value. And one of the things that we kept coming back to is this idea of mindset. So I'll get into what mindsets are. But the more I got into the research, the more excited I got about this topic. So I've done a lot of talks at Delamigo High School, the continuation high school down the road here. And for those of you who don't know, continuation high school is typically a school where high school students have failed out of the traditional high schools for a variety of reasons. So at this school, I would speak once a month for about 4 years. So I would go in and check out with the principal and just check in with the principal and say, so, you know, what's going on? What are the latest issues? And she would keep me up to speed. And so before this one talk, it's about 4 or 5 years ago, she said, oh, John, we've got this new student, African-American, female, 16, really hard case, lives in a group home, commutes from Richmond. Nobody's been able to touch her. She's failing all her classes. Like, this is just, it's a difficult case. I said, okay. I didn't really think much about it because I'm really focused more on the talk I've got to give in 10 minutes and my anxiety demands that I'm like focused on the talk. So I go in there and there's about 80 to 100 kids in this room. And this is a really difficult group to present to because you got ADHD, you got ODD, you got OCD, you got drug issues. While they're there, I mean, you know, 2/3 of them are stoned. So I roll into my presentation. And this girl stands up. 2 lines in my presentation, she stands up and she goes, I got a question for you. I'm black, I'm female, I'm a teenager, I live in a group home, why should I listen to anything you have to say? And I panicked. I was like, oh my God, like what do you say to that? And my mind's just in overdrive. And so after what seemed like a 2 minute pause, but I think it was about 2 seconds, I said, well, yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, on those levels, we're completely different. I'm white, I'm bald, I'm middle-aged, I live with a family. So yeah, you're absolutely right. On those levels, we have nothing in common. But here's what I can tell you. I've been studying the mind for about 20 years. I've been studying emotions in particular for 20 years. And I've got some tools that I can share with you today that will help you to turn down the volume on those intense, negative, ugly emotions like anger, fear, guilt, shame, and tools to turn up the volume on positive emotions. You can try them out. They're free. They don't cost you anything. They don't hurt. If you like them, great. If not, you haven't lost anything. And oh, by the way, they might make your life happier and more successful. And with that, I just kind of let it go, and I rolled back into the presentation. Now, I don't know what happened after that. I know that there are great teachers at that school. I know that there was a great principal at that school, Lucy Daggett, a lady whom I love. But somewhere in the next 3 weeks, that young lady made a decision to change her mindset. And she started coming to school regularly. She started putting forth effort in class. Eventually, she joined student leadership. She graduated in a year and a half from high school. She already had some credits. And then she became the commencement speaker at graduation. And this was a girl no one thought was going to graduate high school. But that's not all. Then she went on to Sac State and ended up graduating college, which is incredible, all from a change in mindset. So I tell you that story just to give you a simple, powerful example of mindset. So I want to show you some of the power of mindset in a bunch of different areas of life. Because one of the things that amazed me is the breadth and pervasiveness of mindset. So Dr. Fabrizio Benedetti was doing a study with patients who are recovering from thoracic surgery. Now, thoracic surgery is very invasive surgery, very painful surgery. When you get out of surgery, you get morphine to help with the pain. Well, what they did is they split the patients who were recovering into two groups. One group got a shot of morphine into the IV. The doctor would come into the room, say, how you doing? I'm going to give you some morphine now. There you go. The other group got the morphine from a pre-programmed pump. Exactly the same amount of morphine. Okay? No difference in the amount of morphine. The only difference was they're in their awareness and in their expectation that they would gain some relief from their pain. Those who saw the doctor inject the IV received 34% more relief from their pain. That's just from a mindset difference. That's just from the expectation, I'm going to feel better. So he didn't stop there. He went on to look at some more, and he wanted to look at when patients were aware of the treatment and expected a benefit, what else would happen? Well, with anxiety sufferers, they received 20% more benefit when they were aware of the treatment and expected a benefit. Those with Parkinson's had an 11% greater decrease in symptoms. Those with blood pressure got 8% more relief in their blood pressure. So what we're talking about here is the placebo effect. And you guys have heard about the placebo effect as like a sugar pill. I mean, that's generally how it's talked to us. I was talking to my daughter saying, you know, it's kind of like you have a headache, I give you a sugar pill, I tell you it's going to help with your pain, it helps with your pain. This is why. It's the mindset. But really, a placebo is a demonstration of how powerful and pervasive our minds are at bringing positive results to us, whether they be in a variety of areas. It could be aging, IQ, health, diet, exercise. Oh, and the nocebo effect exists as well. And this, I only learned this a couple years ago, but and this is kind of funny. The nocebo effect is when you don't believe something will help you, it's pretty much not going to help you. And I was telling this to a 17-year-old client of mine who's very depressed, and he goes, the light bulb went off in his head, and he's like, oh my God, he's like, that's like me and Advil. Because he's believed for years that Advil won't help him at all, and it doesn't. The funny thing is that he has a nocebo effect in pretty much every area of his life. He doesn't believe anything can help him, so therefore he doesn't try, he doesn't put forth effort in any of these exercises or tools, and nothing helps him. But now we're starting to make some traction after going at it from this mindset approach. So what is a mindset? A mindset is a choice to adopt a set of beliefs that you know to be beneficial, that science proves to be beneficial. And most importantly, I think, mindsets can be learned. It's a choice, and you can choose to learn them. So let me tell you another quick story. I got permission from a client of mine to share this story with you. To me, it's one of the more impressive stories and inspirational stories that I know of. So I have a client that's about 24 now. When he was the age of 12, he was in a horrific accident involving a golf club. He was at a golf camp in Berkeley. He was sitting on a curb. Some unaware kid was practicing a golf swing and did a full swing into his head. So he's laying on the cement. He's bleeding out. They saved him. They rushed him to the hospital. He was in a coma for 6 months. When he got out of the coma, he had to relearn how to walk, how to talk, how to eat, how to stand, how to speak. He had to relearn how to do everything. He was in the hospital for another year after that six-month coma. So I got him when he was about 20, having a hard time, you know, finding work, finding a job. And I had known him at this point, like we'd been working together for about a year. And he went and got this really extensive neuropsych evaluation done by a very, very prominent neuropsychologist. Extensive testing. I got a report about that thick. So he comes in after I read the report, and I knew him pretty well at this point. I threw it on the ottoman between us, and I said, okay, so you've seen the report, so we have a choice to make. Either you believe that, and you mow lawns for the rest of your life, or you decide that that's not true for you, and we set about proving it wrong. And so one of the goals that he has, one of the questions he had was, can I do college-level work? I don't have the answer to that. Well, let's set about and see if we can answer that question. Last semester, he went to DVC, took three courses. It was not easy, but he put in a lot of effort. We really focused on putting in daily effort and building strategies for success, habits for success. And he came to me at the end of the semester, kind of hanging his head. He was kind of bummed out. And I said, so, you know, how are your grades doing? He said, I'm not doing that good. I got two C's and a B. And I was stunned. I was like, dude, do you realize you've answered the question? The question was not, can you get A's? The question was, can you do college level work? And you answered that question with a yes. That's amazing. Like, the experts told you could not do that. I mean, the results from this report were mathematical ability, second percentile. Short-term memory, third percentile. Quantitative reasoning, fourth percentile. Reading ability, second percentile. He should not be able to do that. And now he's in his second semester, he's got four courses. You know, again, it's a mindset and it's a choice. And it's, what are the self-imposed limitations in your head? And that's what I want you to consider. What are the limitations, and can you get rid of them and change them to something else? Interestingly, when I was at Cal working on my PhD, so this was 92 to 2000, I was taught that intelligence was fixed. So if you're born with 130 IQ, you die with 130 IQ, and it never changes. In fact, I used to be a school psychologist, so I would put these numbers on kids and say, well, you got a 70 IQ, or you've got 150 IQ, and I just thought that was it. Well, Carol Dweck from Stanford came along about two decades ago and showed that it's not just fixed, that it depends how you think about intelligence. And if you think that intelligence can be malleable, can be improved through effort and hard work, guess what? It can. And not just a little bit either. So Dweck, what she initially did is she interviewed a group of seventh graders, about 800 seventh graders, and she split them into two groups, a group that had a fixed mindset and a group that had a growth mindset, and tracked them. Well, the fixed mindset, their grades went like this over time. The growth mindset, the grades went like this over time. So then she thought, well, can I teach these guys a growth mindset? So she took a group, I think it was about 700, 750 seventh graders, split them into a control and an experimental group, taught the experimental group a growth mindset. And what she found was astonishing, that these seventh graders actually increased their IQ by, on average, 30 points. That's crazy to me. I mean, like, an average IQ is 100. So she taught kids to go from 100 IQ to 130. That's average to superior. That's incredible. And I didn't think it could be done when I was being taught at Berkeley. So what do you need to know about these two mindsets? First, there's two of them. There's fixed and there's growth. The fixed mindset is what most of us grew up with, I think. That intelligence is carved in stone. It's non-changeable. That effort is seen as something that's put in by lesser people, by people maybe not as smart. Failure is interpreted as a lack of intelligence. And one of the underlying beliefs is, if winning means you're a winner, then when you lose, it means you're a loser. So the other mindset, the growth mindset, is that intelligence can change, that it is malleable, and all of us can learn to become smarter and more adaptable or more capable. But learning requires work and effort, and our potential is limitless. And one of the examples that we use is Josh Waitzkin, who was the subject of the movie In Search of Bobby Fischer. And Josh became a world-class chess champion. He doesn't consider himself special. He doesn't consider himself a genius or a prodigy. He looks at himself as very average. But he also knows that he's got to put forth maximum effort if he wants to achieve these high goals. Now, the thing that's amazing to me about Josh is that, so he becomes a chess champion, world champion. I mean, that's pretty good. That wasn't enough for him. After that, he goes, well, I think I want to try martial arts. So he started learning Tai Chi Chuan. And after many failures and much effort and some broken bones, he became world champion at Tai Chi, not once, but twice. I've never heard of anyone doing that, going from chess to martial arts. But he knows that a growth mindset is the way to go. I think the other thing that you want to consider is, I don't know, you guys might be advanced enough not to put the word failure in your vocabulary. But that seems to me to be a fundamental difference between growth and fixed mindset. That fixed mindset uses that word failure. I failed. I'm a failure. I think that we want to pull that out of our vocabulary and replace it with challenge. Because one of the things that you learn with a growth mindset is, you know, when you're hit with a challenge, it's just part of the learning process. That you just want to keep going. You want to find another way around it. So, response to challenges. When met with a challenge, a fixed mindset person will blame themselves. They interpret failure as a lack of ability. They become somewhat depressed and anxious, and they end up disengaging from the material. And I remember doing this in high school, where I was very good at math, I hit calculus and I was like, oh my God, like, I'm not getting this. I must be stupid. And I kind of pulled back from the material. And I remember I barely squeaked a B minus out, and it just, I thought I was a failure. Because at that time I had a fixed mindset. If you have a growth mindset and you encounter challenge, you don't think of it as failure, so you don't blame anybody. It's just part of the learning process. So you look for lessons in the challenges. You persist, and you look for other ways around it, as I said, and you remain hopeful. So what we found in research is that the key to success is not just these traits of perseverance, resiliency, grit, and effort. It's actually the growth mindset which seems to underlie these traits. It underlies and fuels these traits. So once you get the growth mindset down, the other traits seem to follow suit. So let me give you another example of mindset. Stress. So most of us think that stress is bad. And this idea has been fed to us to the media, through the media for years. But in truth, there's two sides to stress. There's stress is good, stress is bad. Stress is enhancing, stress is destructive. So there's more and more research showing that stress can have positive effects on our ability. For instance, before this talk, I was a little bit nervous, which is often the case before I talk. But I just interpret that as, okay, my body's getting ready for a challenge. I'm getting amped, I'm getting alert, I'm getting ready to focus. So the truth about stress isn't that clear. So it really becomes, to what extent do our beliefs about stress affect how we respond to stress? So there's a study done at Yale that looked at 300 people at a company going through layoffs. They split the 300 employees into two groups. One group saw a three-minute presentation on stress is debilitating. And think about that. This is a three-minute presentation. This is about as short an intervention as I've seen. So one group saw stress is debilitating. One group saw a presentation that said stress is enhancing. It helps your performance. So these are, briefly, these are some of the messages that they got in this short presentation. Basically, stress deteriorates your focus, decision-making, drive, and performance, or stress enhances it. And what they found is that the employees who watched the stress is enhancing video had fewer physical aches and pains, less insomnia and muscle tension, and a higher level of engagement and performance at work. I mean, that's amazing for a three-minute intervention. In social sciences, you don't see results like that typically. So now there's one more mindset that's probably a little closer to most of our hearts, and that's aging. So the question is aging inevitable, or do we have some hand in controlling it to a degree? So Ellen Langer, who's been at Harvard and Yale, did a seminal study a while back, and she looked at a group of men in their 80s. She split this group of men into two groups. One group, she said, you guys just reminisce about the 1950s. Just remember it, talk about it. The other group she took for a week and put them in a house which she had decorated as if it were the 1950s. She said, I want you to talk about news events in the 1950s. I want you to listen to radio broadcasts from the 50s. Don't talk about anything past 1959. Speak as if you are in your 50s. And what she found was amazing. This is 1 week that they did this for. And by acting as if they were in their late 50s, they actually changed how they performed on benchmark tests. And by the way, this is going to be a movie soon with Jennifer Aniston, the whole counterclockwise thing, for those that are into that sort of thing. So both groups showed improvement in hearing, memory, and grip strength. But amazingly, the experimental group showed all the above, plus greater flexibility, less arthritis, a 63% increase in intelligence, better vision, which is crazy because I don't know of anything that affects vision, except apparently mindset, and better posture. They were also rated as better looking and younger by independent raters. But again, I mean, it's changing their physical appearance. So if the mind can have this much of an impact on the body, like, what other potential is there? What are we missing? So let me give you one more example if you're not convinced already. So exercise. Ellen Langer said that exercise is a placebo, which means that, hold on, like, am I getting the benefits of exercise because of the exercise? Or am I getting the benefits of exercise because I believe I should be getting benefits from exercise? Kind of a weird question when I first heard it. So what they wanted to do is they wanted to look at, if you're exercising, but you're not aware you're exercising, do you not get any benefit from it? Again, kind of an odd question. And when I first heard that, I was like, okay, how are you going to do this experiment? But they did it. They found chambermaids, housekeepers, in a hotel chain. They interviewed them, two-thirds of these ladies who were working 40 hours a week, changing bed linens, cleaning sinks, vacuuming. Two-thirds of them said, I get no exercise, zero. So then they did a 10-minute, you know, again, a 10-minute intervention. These interventions are so short, it's amazing to me. And they took half these women, showed them a 10-minute presentation saying, hey, your work actually qualifies as exercise according to the Surgeon General. You burn 250 calories vacuuming, you burn 200 changing the bed, you burn 180 cleaning a sink. So you're actually getting 8 hours of exercise a day, 40 hours a week. That was the only thing that changed. So what happened? Well, 2 weeks later, these women were more satisfied with work. Their systolic blood pressure went down. They had a lower hip to waist ratio and they lost weight. They did not join a gym. They did not change what they ate. This was a change, from what we can tell, from their mindset about exercise at work. So hopefully you see that your mindset matters in a big way. So I should say that mindsets are not without limit. They're not limitless. What you do does matter. But there's a lot of new studies out there that are showing pretty convincingly that our mindsets play a huge part in our health and wellness. And by changing your mindset, you can change pretty much any facet of your life in the blink of an eye. Fantasize or think about what could you do if you took away those self-limiting beliefs in terms of getting new business, procrastination, closing the deal, negotiation, public speaking, whatever it is that is your sore spot, your difficulty point. Think about what self-limiting beliefs you have there. I also wanted to give you some tips on how to improve your mindsets. One of the big ones that's out, and has been out for a while, is mindfulness. The mind naturally wants to take us to the past and to the future, typically a negative past and a negative future. One of the best ways to train your attention is through the practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness, just to give you an idea, mindfulness is a form of meditation. It is Buddhist in nature. It doesn't have to be Buddhist. It's a tool we've taken out of Buddhism and done 45 years of research on it. The research is astonishing. It's basically where you sit there and do nothing and focus on your breath. Your mind is automatically going to spit out random thoughts. You learn over time to let those thoughts go and continually bring your attention back to your breath. And through doing this process over and over and over, if you do that 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, for 2 weeks, it changes how you think. If you do it for 8 weeks, it changes the physical structure of your brain. Pretty impressive for a very simple intervention. But one of the things, you know, too many of us go through life mindlessly, and we've got a choice. Either we're mindless or we're mindful. And when we're mindless, we're not aware that we're not there. So you're missing your own life many times. So one of the suggestions from one of the top researchers is focus on new things. Train yourself to focus on new things or changes in your environment. Why? Because it pulls you into the present moment. Because it helps you practice mindfulness. I think you also want to cultivate curiosity. We find that curiosity is an antidote to anxiety. So ask yourself, what am I willing to try? You want to focus on what you can learn from failures or challenges. One of the big ones with the fixed versus growth mindset is focusing on effort over outcome. And I think we've all done this at some point. For those of you who have kids, you've probably told your kids how smart they are. What we find in research is that's not a very good way to go because it encourages and solidifies the fixed mindset. So the more you think I'm smart, when you encounter difficulty, you become brittle in the face of adversity. Because then when you encounter that inevitable challenge, you think, I must not be smart enough. So a far better way to go is to focus on effort. Like, gee, honey, I really like the effort you're putting into that homework. That's fantastic. Keep it up. So focus on the process, not the outcome. And that's true for ourselves as well. Realize that the growth mindset is helpful to you and supported by science. Neuroscience shows that the brain changes rapidly, as I said, you're going to leave here with a different brain than when you came in. That's how fast it changes. And we used to think it didn't change at all. Now we realize it's a matter of minutes and hours. And as you learn, as you kind of experiment with these mindsets, I think your belief in mindsets gets stronger. And so your mindset about mindsets changes. One of the experts tells herself, I love being wrong, which I think that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But it's a great attitude in terms of embracing failure, embracing challenge, and figuring out what can I learn from this. Oh, and the other thing is mindsets are context specific, which means that to some extent, I think we all have some fixed mindsets in some areas of our life and some growth mindsets. So you want to look for where in your life you've got fixed mindsets and challenge those. I also want to touch briefly on stress. So stress is a matter of perception. And this changed my ability to handle stress. It increased my ability to deal with stress when I learned this. That stress is a matter of the gap between the challenge you face and the belief that you can handle it. The bigger that gap is, the more stressed you are. So the way you increase that gap is with thoughts like, I can't handle this, I can't deal with this, I can't take it anymore. The way you close that gap is by identifying those thoughts and challenging them, saying, wait, yeah, this is tough, this situation is difficult, and I can handle it. I can deal with this. And the other thing is, so you want to listen for the fixed mindset in your head. A lot of this is paying attention to your thoughts. Listen for fixed mindset thoughts in your head. And when you hear, I can't do this, I want you to add one word to that. And that one word is yet. I can't do this yet. Thank you very much. That's it for me. And so... So now we've got some time for question and answer if you would like to, if anyone has questions. Yes?
So, I enjoyed hearing about your consulting with Pixar. What was the thing that you took away from that or that you learned?
One of the things that interests me in terms of emotion is that we all seem to have a signature emotional style. That there seems to be one emotion for each of us that is dominant. And I've noticed in my own life that, and usually it's a negative emotion because they're stronger than the positive emotions, but I think that you've got different periods in your life where, I mean, I'm sure there's some people that just have anger as a dominant emotional style throughout their life, or sadness, or anxiety. But I think for most of us, as we grow older and wiser and learn, you know, you go through, the order might change, but let's say you deal with sadness in over 15-year period. Then you find out how to deal with anger. And then you find out how to deal with anxiety/fear. But I think those are some of the important life themes, important challenges that we have to deal with as we grow older. But it's interesting to me that the neuroscience is coming back showing that each of us seems to have this dominant emotional style. So if you watch Inside Out, you'll see that there's a different primary emotion inside in charge of each person. So the dad's primary emotion is anger. Like he's at the control panel. He's at the head of the control panel. The mom is sadness and the daughter is joy. And that's what they're representing there. They're representing an emotional style. Yes? You can get a PDF of it. It's called How Can I Be Happy? If you go to my website. The website's guidetoself.com. There's a couple others, but yes. I do know that that's one of the ways they found out about neurogenesis was, so neurogenesis is the birth of new neurons in the brain, which again, 10 years ago, I don't think we knew, we didn't think it was possible. And some cancer patients kindly and generously donated their brain after their death. And so we could look at the brain. And what we found was there was brain cells that had a radioactive marker that could only be in there as a result of the treatment that they underwent for cancer. So, and then there was daughter cells from those. And so they reasoned from that the only way those could have gotten there was through the birth of new brain cells after the cancer treatment had began. But I don't know of any, I mean, to me, I think the mindset would be powerful enough to look into for those with cancer, given what I found from this presentation. Because I was excited about the research that I found from this. Yes?
I have a question, John, and I'm not sure how to present questions.
That's okay. It happens in this field.
some of the issues I've had over the years is living out of the moment. I don't know if it's anxiety.
Or being human.
Yeah. In other words, while I'm here, I'm thinking about what I should be doing at the next stop. And I think it older, I realize I have to pull back, relax, and enjoy the moment. Are there any techniques that you're aware of that can help keep you, and maybe it's attention deficit disorder, I don't know. Maybe it's some medical.
Could be that you're human. So, I mean, and either one's possible, honestly. But realize, so that the mind's an interesting thing. The way I think of the mind now is it's just a random thought-generating machine. Like, it just sits there and it spits out thoughts. And you got to realize you are bigger than your mind. And the way I can prove that to you is by the fact that you can pull back and look at and observe your thoughts and your feelings. It's called metacognition, meta-emotion. But mindfulness is really the most powerful way to do what you're talking about. And if you can go on YouTube and look up mindfulness. Jon Kabat-Zinn is the guy that really brought it over to the West, and he's amazing. The other thing is to realize that the mind has a negativity bias. So it always wants to focus on negative thoughts, negative feelings, negative occurrences, negative self-definitions, like I'm a loser. Because that's kept us alive on an evolutionary scale or evolutionary perspective for millions of years. But in this day and age, there's not that much, there's no saber-toothed tigers out there. Occasionally there's someone driving at you with a car, but you know, the life and death situations out there are far less than they used to be. But our emotional mind is still reacting to them as if there were those dangers out there. And so the other thing is, I guess I would go back to the mindfulness as really, the more I get into this, the more I realize that mindfulness is really one of the key skills that every one of us needs to master. Because if you think about it, you know, your mind's going to take you to a negative past, you know, lousy stuff that happened to you that you're bitter about or angry or feel shouldn't have happened. Or it's going to take you to a negative future, things you're worrying about, which will probably never happen. And the present moment really seems to be the least painful, most pleasant place to be. And so mindfulness is really a tool to train your attention to help continually bring you back to the present moment again and again and again until you feel like you've got some control over your attention, which is no small feat. But the other thing is that emotion and attention are intricately linked. So when you gain that ability to control or manage your attention, you also gain some skill at managing your emotion. Because, you know, when I talk to clients about anger, for instance, I tell them that to me, anger's like, you remember John Belushi in Animal House, where he had the little devil and angel on his shoulder? I say this to younger clients, like, I've never seen anything like that. Oh, okay. But I think of anger as the devil sitting on the shoulder. And what he does is he hijacks your attention. So he's always looking for, think of anger on a 1 through 10 scale. 1's calm, 10's enraged, 5 slightly angry. Once you start to get to a 2 or a 3, your attention gets taken away from you, hijacked, and you begin scanning the environment for things that annoy you. And all he's looking to do is keep himself alive. He's concerned only about self-survival. And so, I mean, just to give you an example of that, because I think once you get the example, once you get the dynamic, you can see it in your own life. So the example I use, so I was married some years ago. So when I would come home from work and, you know, I'd be a little bit annoyed. I don't know about annoyed, stressed, tired, you know, say a 2 on a scale of that 1 through 10 scale I just gave you. So I would come home. One of my kids would have left their bike in the driveway, right? So I pull up. I have to stop my car, get out of the car, move the bike, pull the bike back in. So now I go from a 2 to a 3. You go inside, I go inside the laundry room, there's dirty clothes all over the floor, I gotta kind of pick my way through the dirty clothes, go from a 3 to a 4. So now this guy is on my shoulder and he's like, what else can I find? So then I go into the hall and let's say there's trash on the floor in the hallway, go from a 4 to a 5. And then, you know, I say hi to my son and he's deep in a video game, no response, 5 to a 6. And then, let's say my youngest one is drawn on the wall or something else. So I go from my youngest one's right there, by the way. She never drew on the wall. She's an angel. So then I go from a 6 to a 7, right? So then I'm having the first interactions, really, with my family for that day. And you can imagine those are not going to go well if I'm at a 7 on a 10-point scale. And so one of the key skills becomes interrupting that anger cycle early, like before you get to a 5. And you can do that a variety of ways. A lot of the traditional anger management tools work, but they don't work if you're not aware in the moment. If you're in the future, if you're in the past, forget about it. Like, that's what I'm saying. You can go through life mindfully or mindlessly. If you're mindless, you're going to be angry, and you don't really have a chance of interrupting the anger cycle because you have no awareness that you're in an anger cycle. So a lot of this does come back to mindfulness, in my belief. The longer I've done this, if you had told me 10 years ago I'd be talking about mindfulness to groups, I would have told you you were crazy. I never thought that. But the research is so compelling, and it's in so many areas that it's too much to look up or to overlook. Yeah.
I have 3 kids. 2 of them have growth mindsets. The other one has a fixed mindset.
Okay.
Same family, same mom and dad.
Yeah, isn't that wild the way that works?
But do you have any tips or skills, like maybe 2, to change that fixed mindset to a thank you? We obviously talked earlier, and have a slide for me.
There's a game you can play at dinner. It's called Sun, Storm, Rainbow. So you go around, take turns going around the table. Sun is something well that happened or something they're happy or proud about. Storm is what challenge should you face. Rainbow is what's the positive meaning can you find in the storm. That's one way to do it.
We actually play that game, which is surprising. And I haven't read your book. But we just say good, bad, and challenge and opportunity for the day.
Okay.
But he still how do you get somebody to change? He's 10. Or what skills can you give him to say, instead of, I'm a failure, which he likes to say often, and he's incredibly bright and talented in many areas, to, wow, that's an opportunity, that was a challenge.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good question. I think that, you know, part of it is focusing on effort over outcome. And part of it, I think, is getting him to understand. I mean, like, if he came in to see me, I would immediately go to fixed versus growth mindset and try and teach him that concept. Mm-hmm. There are some videos on YouTube that are fixed versus growth mindset that you can use for kids. So you might have him watch a few of those. The other thing I would talk about is black and white thinking with him. Because one of the things that happens, there's a number of cognitive errors that we make, thinking errors. And when we get upset, almost every one of us can or has gone to black and white thinking, all or nothing thinking. I'm a failure. Mm-hmm. Like, well, that's not true. I mean, yes, you failed at times, but you're not a failure all the time. And so I try and point out that with younger clients, the difference and just the cognitive error of black and white, all or nothing thinking. But the problem is with someone like him, you have to do it when he's calm. Mm-hmm. Not when he's slightly angry or really angry and in that black or white thinking. Like, nothing gets, when we're angry, I don't even bother talking to people. Like, nothing's going to get in because they're so convinced of their righteousness. And the last thing they want to do is have anger or have some sort of new information enter their head, which is why I think, you know, emotional management is such a key skill in education. Like, if you're being bullied at school and you're anxious and fearful at school, forget about learning new information. It's not going to happen. So we have to teach children ways to manage their own stress, to cultivate relaxation, positive emotions, curiosity, contentment, so that they are in a good place to be able to learn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then one of you had also mentioned executive coaching, but your clients, what type of consultation?
So my practice is split between 15 to 25 year old guys and 35 to 65 year old guys. And so that part I kind of call executive coaching. And then I do emotional consultation with a lot of these guys, some drug and alcohol. But it's funny because I teach a lot of the same skills to both groups, you know, mindfulness, forgiveness, how do you forgive, self-compassion, relaxation skills. Because in this day and age, you know, so you've got the autonomic nervous system, which splits into the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system. So we're really good at turning on the parasympathetic nervous system, which is, you know, stress, go, 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 do, do, do. We're really, especially in this valley, we're not very good Well, sorry, that's the sympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic is relaxation. So if you think of the gas and the brakes on the car, we're really good at hitting the gas. We're not very good at putting the brakes on. So just that the relaxation skills, the being able to turn this off to an extent, becomes key, I think.
Thank you so much. You've been very insightful. What I've always enjoyed is your stories and applications to real life. But I've always found it very insightful. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you, guys.